Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Instant coffee, energy bars, canned soup, deli meats, dehydrated food. You can find it all in your local supermarket. You can probably find a lot of that in your own kitchen.
But you might be surprised to learn that all these foods, and many more, from ready-to-eat guacamole to goldfish crackers, were developed and brought to you by the U.S. military.
And according to Anastasia Marx de Salcedo, Americans eat more processed foods than anyone else in the world. We also spend lavishly on military research. Those two facts explain why so many foods on our grocery store shelves started out as military rations. Anastasia Marx de Salcedo is a Boston-based food writer. Her new book is called Combat Ready Kitchen, How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat. And she joins us now. Welcome. It's great to have you, Anastasia.
Thank you for having me, Anthony and Meghna.
Really, really fascinating book. And I want to just ask you, what inspired you to write this? Because I'd love you to tell the story about it began with a sandwich. Right?
Yes, it began with a sandwich. It began with my kids' lunch. And I was sitting there and many parents are trying to find a balance between healthy and not so healthy. The not so healthy side, I was thinking the energy bars, the juice pouch, my cheesy crackers, the healthy side, the sandwich. But I started to think, I said, wow, these ingredients really are no fresher or healthier than the other ones. And so I started researching each of the ingredients in the sandwich, and at the origin of the long shelf life for two of those items, the supermarket bread and the packaged deli meat, I found this reference to this obscure U.S. Army base, the Natick Soldier System Center.
And this is the sort of fascinating local angle, because probably a lot of people don't know exactly what goes on in this research center out at Natick. Tell us a little bit about it.
Right. The Natick Soldier System Center is actually one of 80 Department of Defense federal laboratories, and there they research and develop everything to do to support the individual soldier. So that means things like tents, textiles, body armor, airdrop, and of course, combat rations.
So, Anastasia, we visited this center in Natick, the Army Combat Feeding Directorate out there, and we prepared a short report. It'll last about 4.5 minutes or so. So I want to play it and then come back to you and talk about a whole bunch of interesting issues that you raise in your book, okay?
Sure.
Okay, let's listen. This is ground zero of the military nutritional complex. It's called the Combat Ration Research and Development Facility, part of the sprawling Army research base in Natick.
Basically, it's a large industrial kitchen where we do a lot of benchtop development of ration products.
Jeremy Whitson is deputy director of the Combat Feeding Directorate, which employs 90 people and spends about $13 million a year to develop, test, and package foods for soldiers.
Really, what's at stake is soldier performance, warfighter performance. We want to provide warfighters with the proper nutrition to meet their needs in any environment, in any battlefield situation that they might come in contact with.
They develop many products right here. They also work with many of America's big food producers. Either way, Whitson says the goal is to produce food that is nutritious and safe, even if it's been sitting in a warehouse for 3 years. It also needs to be lightweight and durable, tough enough to survive an airdrop.
That's really the nature of the science behind these products. Is we don't want a fair fight.
Want a fair fight. You mean you want an advantage?
We don't want a fair fight. We want an advantage, and we can provide that advantage through nutritional intervention.
Behind you, I'm just looking up on the walls, and you've got a history of U.S. military rations from the Revolutionary and Civil Wars through World War I, Korean War, Vietnam War, and the development of the meals ready to eat, the MREs. Right. So just give me a sense about how this has changed over 200 years plus of history.
You know, through the Revolutionary and Civil Wars, armies were actually taking live cattle, livestock with them, marching with them. During World War I, we actually got into actually providing them rations that they would take with them, some shelf-stable products that were primarily canned. It was all canned. And really, the biggest development in the 1900s was the move to flexible packaging, flexible material. So you still had cans in Vietnam, but during Vietnam, we were actually developing the meal ready to eat, the MRE, And the game changer in that ration was the flexible material.
What do you hear from the soldiers about what you're doing, about what they want?
Our recommendations on changes to the services is based 100% on soldier feedback. What we're seeing now is, you know, really what you would see in any of the chain restaurants that you might frequent, and the sort of the evolution of the menu to more ethnic type foods, Mexican dishes, Asian dishes, things like that. And those are represented in the MRE and in the other rations as well. And we also have vegetarian options too for warfighters that tend to eat that way.
Other countries' military rations reflect their tastes as well. For example, the Italians include wine in theirs, the French, a little pâté, and the favorite American MRE, spaghetti with meat sauce. On this day, we sample an MRE, a meal ready to eat, which includes peanut butter and crackers, a drink mix, M&Ms, diced pears, and the main course.
Menu 15, Mexican-style chicken stew, which you also call ragu du poulet à la mexicaine.
That's French.
Yeah, clearly, that's French.
English and French are the NATO languages.
Oh, I see. So this is actually to communicate to people who might not be English speakers,
yes,
as opposed to being sort of French restaurant fancy.
Right, yes. That's
okay.
That's the idea. We're not... Yeah, we're not touting ourselves as French cuisine.
Can I break into
sure.
this? Sure. It's getting hot fast. Oh, my God, it's like really hot.
So what we've got going on
and just
in there,
to be clear, just so the listener understands, I put in, you know, this is a couple of ounces of water, and things are getting very hot very quickly.
So what we've got going on in there is the water is reacting with magnesium to create an exothermic chemical reaction. The idea is in about 10 minutes, depending on your ambient conditions, you've got a piping hot meal, basically 100 degrees over ambient conditions, ambient temperature.
So the first thing is it's impressively hot. It's really warm. It's really good too, actually.
Good.
Well, this has, I'm impressed that this would hang out on a shelf for up to 3 years because it's clearly got big chunks of chicken in it. You can see the corn, you can see the remnants of tomatoes, and it's got a good flavor. What does one MRE cost, or is it not calculated that way?
A little over $8. So to feed a soldier for one day using MREs, probably between $24 and $30.
Wow. I would have imagined much, much less. I mean, that's not an insignificant amount of money.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But when you think about all the science and engineering that has gone into this product, you know, you're looking at a product that can sit on the shelves or can sit in a cargo ship or in a cave somewhere around the world. It can sit there for 3 years. So it's a pretty dynamic product.
And while many soldiers might grumble about MREs, David Aceta is not among them. He's the public affairs officer here in Natick, so it's not his job to complain. But to be fair, he spent 25 years in the Army with multiple deployments overseas, where he says he learned to appreciate modern MREs.
If you are sitting on a mountainside in Afghanistan and you're cold and wet and tired and hungry, and then you have the ability to open up this meal and heat it, and you have food that you can recognize as something that you would eat when you were home, that provides a tremendous morale boost for our soldiers.
And that was David Aceta, Chief of Public Affairs, and we also heard from Jeremy Whitson, Deputy Director of the Combat Feeding Directorate at the Army Research Lab in Natick. And we're back with Anastasia Marks de Salcedo. She's the Boston-based food writer and author of Combat Ready Kitchen, How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat. So, you know, Anastasia, you talk about how the military helped give birth to food science. What are some of the products? We mentioned, Megan and I did at the top of the show, but what are some of the products and innovations that we see all around us that came from that lab out of Natick?
Well, actually, in the book, I take the reader on a supermarket tour, and I remove all the items with a military origin or influence. And afterwards, I estimate that the supermarket would be half empty.
Half empty.
That influence is so great. So I've brought a few of those products with me today that you can look at, and we can talk about a couple of them.
Yeah, so you've got some Annie's macaroni and cheese.
Yeah, I have a bunch of products with cheese powder in them, dehydrated cheese powder.
Doritos, Goldfish crackers.
And Annie's mac and cheese. I have a freeze-dried coffee.
Right.
I have the retort pouch that they were talking about, the revolution in packaging, the flexible can. I have two some herbs and spices. These
dried herbs and spices.
Yeah, right. Benefit from the Army's huge food irradiation program, a four-decade, $80 million program. I have the energy bar. Most parents don't realize that the energy bar started out as
Yeah, you an have a section in your book where you say America runs on, and it's not Dunkin' Donuts, right? It's energy bars.
It's energy bars.
Yeah.
That's correct. And then I have some packaging. I have cling wrap and M&Ms and the very latest success, which is a high-pressure processed deli meat here, which can be produced without many chemicals and stored for a relatively long period of time.
So these are a lot of products that people depend on. But you say the military influence on this industry is a mixed blessing. So give me a sense of what's good about this and what gives you concern.
Well, the good thing is that we're all busy and hectic, and we have many things to do. And these products are genuinely convenient, easy, generally affordable. On the downside, we can look back at what they were telling you at the Natick Center. They fund science that creates rations that are imperishable. They have to last for up to 3 years at 80 degrees Fahrenheit, that can be durable, dropped out of a helicopter, squished in a backpack, are affordable, and appeal to a broad range of palates. And because those values aren't necessarily the values we consumers might want for long-term human health or environmental sustainability.
Right. In other words, if you're thinking about fresh food, wholesome food, organic food, locally grown food, these are the kinds of products that probably are not going to be that kind of food.
Yeah, I've kind of started to begin thinking of these not so much as food, but as food-flavored shelf life systems, because to last that long, there are many different processes and ingredients that are there really just to maintain stability and keep the food safe over a long period of time.
I'm interested, too, and you write about this, in the military's relationship with big major brands that we know, Campbell, ConAgra, General Mills, Kraft Foods. How does that work?
Well, that works a couple of different ways, but one of the most important is something called the CRADA, which is a Cooperative Research and Development Agreement. And these are research projects that don't come under the federal contracting rules, so there's no reporting and so forth, and they're voluntary. The Army and industry and sometimes academia enter into them together, and then the industry gets to use whatever comes out of that research project. Because the Army is interested in the big questions in food science, are really at the forefront of how to preserve food for such a long time, how to make it safe. So those things are then taken by industry and turned into products. And one actually excellent example is something I brought along here, which is a high-pressure processed product called Natural Choice from Hormel. It's a deli ham, and that came out of a Natick and a consortium with industry in the late 1990s and early 2000s. Hormel was just one of, I think, 12 major companies. It took that technology and turned it into a hit and this debuted in 2006, and all the other big meat processing companies followed suit.
Anastasia, we literally have 5 seconds left here, but I mean, the sort of final question I want to ask you is, I think most people don't know this. I mean, why is it important to sort of understand this link between the military and what we're eating?
Because I think really there's a huge issue here, which is food science is just the beginning. I spoke about there are 80 Department of Defense labs. Each of those have multiple programs. This is going on in every sector of our economy, in medicine, automotive, construction, etc.
All right. Anastasia Marx de Salcedo, her book is Combat Ready Kitchen, How the U.S. Military Shapes the Way You Eat. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.